Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Tuesday, October 10th, 2023. We are holding the meeting today on Tuesday because it was a federal holiday yesterday, which was Monday, October 9th. And to begin with, as you just heard, this meeting is being recorded. The meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com. I would like to share a few helpful tips for everyone who is joining this meeting. Anybody who is joining through phone calls, if you would like to make comments, you can press star six to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing star nine. Everybody who is on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon and that will mute or unmute yourself. And you can click on the raise hand icon to virtually raise or lower hands. If you're able to use these tools, it will be great help because then we would know if anybody's trying to make some comments and we can have one speaker at a time. So in advance, thank you if you're able to use the tools. Everybody should be on mute right now. And I would request for you to please stay on mute unless speaking. It helps us eliminate any external noise. And as just a reminder, we do have two American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. I would request for anyone who speaks, please state your name before your comments, because it helps the interpreters in doing their job pretty well. And it also helps everyone who is on the who's listening to the meeting on the phone knowing who the speaker is, and it helps everyone who listens to the audio afterwards. We do have a presentation today, so I would request our presenter to please describe your presentation in detail for the convenience of our members and members of the public who are blind or have low vision. If we have any public comments, I would request anybody intending to make public comments, please either send me a chat message if you're able to do so, or when we go to that section, please try and raise your virtual hands so that we can have the members in the order in which they request to speak. Just as a reminder, we would have 3 minutes allotted for each speaker, each person who wants to make comments. I don't like to interrupt, but I would try to give you a 30 seconds heads up that your time is coming up. We are practicing this just to make sure that if we have multiple people who would like to make comments, everybody gets an opportunity. And if we have any remaining time, anybody who would like to make additional comments, we would be happy to come back to you. Chair Calabia, if you permit, I can go ahead and read the agenda and then take the roll call of the committee members.
Yeah, please do.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'll share my screen while I read the agenda. So if you give me one quick moment. And I believe my screen is visible at this point. Could someone confirm that for me?
I can see it.
Okay, great. Thank you. So as soon as I finish reading the agenda, we will go through the roll call of the committee members. Afterwards, Tino Calabia, chair of the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting, will go through reviewing and approval of today's meeting agenda and last month's meeting minutes. Then we have Melissa Kim. She would be giving us an update about the Better Bus Network redesign. Afterwards, we have a couple of committee discussions. First one is public right-of-way access guidelines, followed by the Bus and Rail Subcommittee work plan. Then we will have public comments section, and the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 6 p.m. I'm going to stop sharing my screen. Now going to roll call of the committee members. When I call out your name, please confirm your presence. Azhar Atura. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabria?
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles? Rico Dansky? Rico actually had informed that due to a medical procedure, he may not be able to join today's meeting. Tawan Farmer?
Present.
Thank you. Deborah Fisher? Deborah had actually informed that she may not be able to join today. Marcy Goldstein? And Marcy had informed that she may be a few minutes delayed today. Timothy Howard?
Thank you, everyone, for attending.
Steve Caffin? And Steve had informed that he may not be able to join today due to his travel. Thomas Mangrum?
Here.
Okay, thank you. Philippa Mazzell? Sandy Newsel?
Present.
Thank you. Bill Posner?
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray? Denise Rush?
Present.
Thank you. Paul Samarkand?
From Joseph, that is called a text.
Patrick Sheehan?
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simono? And Philip Weintraub. Okay, that concludes the roster for today's meeting. If anyone joins a bit later, I will be watching to mark their presence accordingly. Chair Calabi, at this time, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Yes, the next item is the review of the minutes of the last meeting. Am I right?
Yes, it's the agenda and the last month's meeting minutes.
Okay. Well, do you want to repeat the agenda or? You did that already, so.
I stated the topics from the agenda today. So now, if you'd like to go through the motion of approving the today's meeting agenda and last month's meeting minutes.
Yeah.
We approve the agenda as written.
I second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The agenda is approved. The next item, of course, has to deal with the review of the minutes. Am I right, Anu?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, as mentioned during last week's meeting, in September, we heard a presentation regarding the blue, orange, silver line study. We also heard a report on the bus hold indicator light and apparently the problem that we identified earlier was by September's meeting corrected. There will be no flashing, somewhat like strobe lights to alert the bus drivers to wait. There will be just a steady colored light. We also had a long discussion about wayfinding with Sarah. And I think that Sandy is going to make some comments later, although it is not germane to what Sarah Meyer said last meeting. And finally, we had a Montgomery County staff member talk about the bus islands. Does anyone have any objections to the way the minutes were drafted?
Chair Calabria, this is Anu. Dr. Posner has his hand up.
Yes, Phil. Tino, during the discussion of the flashing light signal, it was brought up that not only is there a danger of triggering seizures, but the mere fact that passengers on the bus know that there is a train in the station might trigger a rush to get off to catch that train for people that are transferring. And so that is an issue of deboarding, as well as people from the train getting up and connecting with the appropriate bus. And I think that WMATA has to be aware of that, because people on the bus don't want to wait 30 minutes to get onto the train to go to their next site. And that discussion took place, but it didn't make it to the minutes. So I suggest adding it.
Yeah. Anu, could you take that into account and amend the minutes to...
Yes, it might have been missed in the minutes because it was a discussion I had with Ms. Meyer, both verbally during the session, but also via chat. But I think it's an important point.
Okay. But if it was mentioned at all, we should state that. It might not have been in the detail you just talked about, but let's at least say for the record that it was mentioned and mentioned by you. Thank you. Are there any other amendments or corrections needed for the minutes? If not, I guess we'll call for a vote to approve the minutes.
Tino, just quickly, for other people to hear, I did mention that the hold the button to get audio information at Bus Islands currently says in the minutes, hold for 2 minutes, but I believe that is supposed to be 2 seconds. And I think Anu's going to correct that.
Yeah, I'm sure Matt Johnson would agree with you. Matt Johnson was the county... a representative to discuss it. I'm sure he knows that, and he would agree. So it should be corrected. Yeah. Thank you, Sandy.
Other than that, if there's no corrections, I'll say
You move?
A motion to accept the minutes as corrected.
Seconds?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The motion is carried to approve the minutes. The next item, Anu?
Okay, so the next item is a presentation by Melissa Kim, and she has joined. She's joined, connected with us on the meeting. She's going to be presenting the Better Bus Network redesign. So, Melissa?
Yes.
And if you'd like to, there you go. Okay, perfect.
All right, are you able to see my screen?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you again for having me. My name is Melissa Kim and I work in Metro's Office of Planning and I'm on the project management team for the Better Bus Network redesign. So I'm just here today to give you an update on where the project is right now. A little bit, I guess I'll go to the agenda. A project background and timeline to... I know it's been a little bit of time since we last spoke to you all, so I want to give a sense of where we are in the project. In April, April and May finished up some intensive public engagement on the project, so I want to present some of the high-level findings from that engagement, talk through next steps, and then take any questions that you all may have. And also, feel free to, as I'm going along, raise your hand and ask questions as we're working through the slides. All right. So quick reminder, just since it's been a little bit, the Better Bus Network redesign is a project to rethink, redesign, and revitalize bus service. Part of it, the project is part of the Better Bus Initiative. There's a graphic on the right side of the screen that shows several other ongoing and future efforts that are also part of the Better Bus Initiative that intend to improve bus service for the region. And those include things like better customer information, improved bus stop and shelter, amenities, bus priority lanes and signals, and zero emission vehicles. Another quick reminder slide, we kicked off the Better Bus Network redesign project in the summer of 2022. Just wanted to reiterate that a bus network redesign is something that many of our peers are doing and even some of the local jurisdictional partners are doing. And it's really an opportunity for us because before this project, we hadn't looked holistically at our bus network since it was developed 50 years ago. And through this project, we can address a lot of the needs that are shown here on this slide. So that's things like making sure we're really connecting to where people need to go at the times that they need to travel, and building a network that promotes equity, and making an easy to use network that has kept up with the evolving and changing that our region has done in the last 50 years. And I see a hand. Denise, do you have a question?
Denise?
Ms. Rush, if you would unmute yourself.
Darnice,
are you trying to ask a question also?
No, just joining, letting you know I'm online. Thanks.
My question is to when you finish, because you might cover it. So I was just putting my hand up so that I would be ready for the question after you finish.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you. We'll make sure to call on you right when done with the presentation. All right. So again, the project has been going on for about a year at this point, and we started with an analysis of existing service and travel patterns, some initial engagements, and ultimately the purpose of this project is really to develop the visionary bus network that the region needs, and we're calling that the visionary network. So earlier this year, we developed a draft visionary network, which is what we took out to the public in April, May, and through June. And this visionary bus network was built to expand our frequent service network, to provide more service that operates all day and all week, to increase cross-town and cross-county connections, to make sure we're extending our service beyond jurisdictional borders where it makes sense for our customers, and really focus on better connecting destinations with direct and frequent routes. So in the middle of this year, we held our extensive public engagement and stakeholder engagements. And a large part of what I'll be going through today is what we heard from you all and from the public during that engagement period. So where we are now, we received over 8,000 route-specific comments from members of the public, from stakeholders, and from our operations staff here at Metro. And so what the team has been working on recently is going through each of those comments and incorporating them along with looking at kind of the data behind it to revise the draft visionary network. And so you can see here, the graphic on the slide is we developed this draft visionary network that we shared in spring 2022. And what we've been working towards and what we plan to share in our next phase of outreach, which is going to be early next year, is an updated revised visionary network that incorporates a lot of the comments that we heard from the public, as well as a draft year one network. And I'll get into what exactly that is in just a little bit. So really quickly, wanted to provide a brief summary of what we did and what we heard in the engagement that took place earlier this spring. So through this engagement, we interacted with over 20,000 folks at different public events, which included our large-scale workshops that I know several of you actually came and attended, which we really appreciate, as well as our pop-up events, which was when we brought a tent and a lot of the materials to our metro stations focused on heavy bus transfer locations. We went to farmers markets. We went to some grocery stores. So we tried to go throughout the region and meet bus customers, as well as non-customers where they are, to hear from them about what we were proposing. We also heard from over 500 bus operators. We went out to each of the different divisions to get their input as our frontline staff on where what the recommendations were and whether they had any suggestions for making it better. And as I mentioned earlier, all of that really resulted in these over 8,000 comments on the different routes. In addition to our public and employee engagement, we also engaged a lot of stakeholders as part of this effort. We spoke with over 110 elected officials. We engaged with several advocacy groups, community-based organizations. We've come to the RAC and AAC both several times, and we appreciate the input we've received from both of these important metro committees through this process. We also had a large digital advertising campaign, and that included multilingual advertising through a variety of different outlets, also social media, and we had a large web presence as well in our engagement. Really quickly, the purpose of this slide is to show a lot of the people that we engaged with and that we heard that we got survey responses from, what was their primary method of engaging with the project. And we saw far and away that most people actually heard about the project and provided input through one of our Better Bus Experience live events. And so that included workshops that I mentioned earlier, the pop-ups that I mentioned earlier, as well as bus ride-alongs where we actually we rode on buses that would be changing a significant amount in our proposed visionary network to get input from the riders on those buses. And you can see here the project website, word of mouth, and social media were all the next ways that people got information about the project, as well as a variety of other digital ways of engaging. We heard that the most helpful ways to engage with the project, or most informative ways to engage with the project, we heard were our in-person workshops or pop-up events. And that makes sense. It was where we were able to spend the most time with folks and share, kind of get into the details of how their specific trips might be impacted and talk through why changes were recommended and get into more details. Folks also on the ride-alongs found 93% of folks found that it was a helpful way to get input on the project and also provide feedback. Webinars, 92% of folks thought were helpful. And then the website was the lowest way that had the lowest response rate for being helpful, although it was still 88% of folks that found it to be helpful. And I see now two hands are up, and I don't remember whose was up first. It might have been
Denise.
Denise? Well, I don't know if Denise was maybe waiting until the very end. So if either Phil or Tino, you have questions about what I've shown thus far, feel free to go ahead and unmute now. Phil, you might have been first.
Yes, thank you. First, let me compliment you on the wonderful job you're doing. I have a question about silos, the silos in WMATA. And one of the things that you might break out of your silo with is twice a year, WMATA analyze Better Bus Network. And it adjusts its bus service based upon their data from the preceding years. And hopefully they will be talking to you and implement some of your ideas with the November readjustment. And then you can readjust the second time with the second readjustment in April. The other thing for input, hopefully you will be accessing ADAP and the bus people so that you can take a look at the needs for ridership to healthcare, hospitals, doctors, dialysis, et cetera. And one of the things we've seen in the past is to make sure that there are sufficient bus stops located near Metro Access users so that they can use the bus to get to rail and not have to use Metro Access.
Mm-hmm.
So again, if we can get the three silos of ADAP and bus regulation and your planning, that would be wonderful. And you're doing a great job. Thank you again for all that you do.
Appreciate that. And definitely your point is very well taken. I will say the one positive or one quick answer to your first comment is that bus planning and bus transportation are both a really big part of this project. So the folks that have recommended kind of the short-term pick changes for this coming winter, as well as you mentioned the one in April, a lot of those are the same folks that are working on the service planning part of this project. So there should be parallels through those efforts. And that's a great point about working more closely with ADAP. We have been thinking really strategically about access to key destinations, and certainly hospitals and medical facilities are ones that we're considering. So one of the ways that we're trying to understand the impact this network would have on folks is looking at access to different destinations in different time periods. So whether that's 30 minutes or 60 minutes, and trying to understand whether they have access to more or hopefully not fewer, but medical facilities. That being said, we haven't taken a look at the ADA data. So I will reach out to the folks in ADAP to start thinking about how we can incorporate that data as well. That's a very good point.
That's great, because again, if bus doesn't run, Metro Access doesn't run.
Mm-hmm.
So if the bus doesn't run on Sunday, can't go to church,
mm-hmm.
etc. But thank you. I trust you. You've done a great job.
Appreciate that. We're trying. And definitely your points are all very well taken. And I think hopefully it does feel like Metro is working to be slightly less siloed. But yes, appreciate all of that. Tino, did you also have a question?
Yes. And I guess I can raise it now. Obviously, you've done a phenomenal job, all those contacts. At the same time, you know, process, while it's really important, process extended too long is really defeating itself. People are interested in product.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you say you'll be finished in June of 2024, but you've come so far now, isn't it possible to have a kind of pause for the routes or desired routes that have been identified now? That doesn't mean you can start with every newly desired route or revised route, but can you select some so we can deliver some product and make people think that this is not going to be an endless process? The other thing is I live near the Western Division bus terminal and the bus garage. And I see buses. They come not so frequently, but at least they're serving people, but they're huge. Can't you tie it in somehow to getting mini buses, which will help save money and maybe run more frequently with mini buses? I know that, for example, the T2, which serves my area, maybe they're only a third full. Now, I don't see them at all hours of the day and certainly not every rush hour, but they're not full. And there must be some way of using mini buses to start serving these areas that people say are needed and are not yet served. So that's my point. But let me say again, as actually my colleague, Steve Kafin, who's actually a vice chair here, he said it at the last time you had a bus rail committee meeting, that, you know, it's time to get some product out there and not even, you know, June 2024 isn't that far away. On the other hand, people have been waiting and waiting. So is there anything you can do about that?
Yeah, both great questions. So I'll take the second one really quickly first. In terms of the minibuses, that's kind of a tricky issue because unfortunately, a lot of the cost associated with operating buses is actually paying for the operator's time. And so that cost stays relatively constant between the different vehicle size. So definitely something that we can talk about, but I do think that Metro tries to, certainly there are kind of the mini buses that operate along routes, but typically those are selected for routes where there's like tight turn radii or other kind of configurations that make it difficult to operate the 40-foot bus as opposed to being smaller because there are fewer passengers. So I do think the folks in bus planning can speak better to that than I can, but I think that's typically the way that Metro approaches the bus size on, and which size buses are on different routes, is that unless there's some sort of challenging or operational reason why a 40-foot bus cannot be on that route, that we will have a 40-foot bus because it does end up costing around the same amount of money once the bus is procured, at least. Your other point, yes, I do remember Steve mentioning that actually at a Community Connections Committee meeting on the point of action being what folks are really interested in. And I do think this kind of goes well along with the comment that Phil had earlier about whether there are things that we can do in kind of the next couple of service changes that are upcoming. I do think one of the challenges there is that we definitely want to have one more round of public engagement, because until now, we haven't taken out our year one network to the public, which is what we would be able to actually operate within our existing resources. So within the buses that we have today, within the operators that we have, and within the operating funds that we get today. So I think we do want to have that one more round of engagement, but then you're right, after that, we can start thinking about whether there are shorter term changes that we can kind of quick wins we can get. I think we have to be really strategic about it, because in the network redesign, there are going to be some larger scale changes. And a lot of those changes are intended to work together as a network. But that doesn't mean there aren't short-term changes that we can implement that are things that we've heard a lot about. For example, there are several places where folks would like to be able to travel just over the jurisdictional border to be able to get to a key destination across, that we've heard a lot of positive input about. And that doesn't necessarily impact the rest of the network per se. So that's another note that I will take about the importance of action, and pass back along to the Metro project management team, who's kind of pushing this along and has these regular conversations with leadership, to kind of bring that up with them. Like, what are the quick wins that we can try to push forward as we're still working on the holistic network redesign? So I appreciate that.
You say quick win. The piloting a few new routes, mm-hmm, may not always end up with quick wins. Mistakes could be made.
Sure.
But yeah, also, yeah, mistakes then can be corrected. Mm-hmm. But we need to get something out there, even though the long term, of course, is to wait until June 24. So anyway, thanks a lot, Melissa, for listening to us.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely understand. And we'll try to continue to have those discussions. And it's something we can continue talking more about at the CCC too. So appreciate you bringing it up.
You're welcome.
All right. So really quickly wanted to get into some of the kind of high level findings from our engagement. I will say we have a full engagement summary that is an accessible document that I will share with Anu to share with all of you that gets into a little bit more detail about each of the specific things we did as part of our engagement, and then also a little bit more detail about what we heard. But for the sake of time, I didn't have I won't have the opportunity to get into all of that, but I'll make sure that that document. And then we also have a document that's actually a summary of all of the comments that we heard about every single route that was in the Visionary Network. So I'll make sure that those two documents are shared after I'm done today. But one high level finding was that 61% of people that responded to the survey had a positive impression of the Draft Visionary Network. Interestingly, if people were at an in-person event, that percentage of positive impression was higher. So 70% of people that came to an in-person event had a positive impression of the Draft Visionary Network. For those who engaged on the web, it was a lower. It was 49% of those who took the web survey had a positive impression. We also found that 70% of low-income respondents said it was somewhat or much better, the Visionary Network, and 68% of people of color who responded said it was somewhat or much better. So that's slightly higher than the total number of positive impressions across. So we thought that was a good finding that the majority of people did think that the Visionary Network would be better for the region. Again, I've mentioned this number a couple of times, but we got over 8,000 total comments on all the different routes that were in the Visionary Network. And the majority of the comments that we got were about where the route actually goes. So the route alignment. We also did get a number of comments about the level of service, which is essentially how frequently the bus comes or the how long it's operating. So when it starts operating, when it ends operating. We also did get requests for other new destinations providing service to those areas. Most of the comments that we received were from our online tool that was called your comment on your the comment on your route tool. We also received a large number of comments from a variety of other sources like operator feedback, surveys, social media, letters from stakeholders and others. So again, we're reading each and every one of the comments that we received over these various different feedback responses. And ultimately by the time we go out in phase three in the beginning of next year, we'll also have thematic responses that help understand how we addressed each of the comments that we got. See the bottom. So the graphic on the bottom right shows that most of the comments that we received through the comment on your route tool were negative comments. And we weren't really surprised about that. I think it's human nature that you're more likely to provide a comment if there's something about it that you don't like. So most of the comments, 47% of the comments we received in the comment on your route tool, which allowed someone to place a pin next to their route and provide a specific comment, 47% of those were a dislike comment, 34 were a comment about I need, so whether it's I need access to a new destination or I need it to be more frequent, those types of comments. And then a much smaller percentage were comments about folks liking different recommendations. All right, so what are we doing with all of this input? So the phase that we're in right now is revisions to the Visionary Network were made or continue to be made based on both comments and ideas that we heard from the public, from stakeholders, from elected officials, and then also combined with re-looking at all of the data analysis that was done on travel needs and demand. So making sure that those two different things informed all the revisions that we made to the Visionary Network. And as the team's been making those revisions, we've also continued to prioritize the project goals. And those are equity, connectivity, and the customer and operator experience. And then really quickly wanted to highlight again, really what we've been intending to do with this project. So even as we've been revising the network based on comments and making changes, we're still keeping a lot of the tenants that we discussed in earlier phases of the project in mind. So that includes things like more frequent service for people, more service that is all day and all week. Some of the things that I mentioned earlier, like what I just mentioned about extending service beyond jurisdictional borders. So I won't get into all of those, but those continue to be important even as we're making revisions based on what we heard from the public and from you all. And so where do we go from here? The next phase, I mentioned the year one network a little bit before, but what we're doing is we're using the visionary network to develop this year one network. And again, the year one network is intended to be the first step to implement the visionary network, but that uses the resources that we have available today. So the year one network is a transformative bus network that we're really focused on making sure it's equitable, that it reallocates resources to best meet the region's goals for bus service. And it will provide a base that can be built on in the future. And then in terms of next steps, we're right now finalizing the revised visionary network, as I mentioned earlier, and finalizing the draft year one network. And the draft year one network is going to be the focus of our public engagement that takes place at the beginning of next year. So another step that we're going to be starting soon once we've finalized those networks is to start developing engagement tools and materials for that effort. And that's it for me today. So thank you again so much for your time. Take any more questions at this time. I know, Denise, that you had one earlier. So happy to have you raise your hand again. But yes, okay. appreciate the comments thus far.
This is Denise Rush. About two summers ago, we were introduced to, you press the button and it tells you in English and Spanish what the stop is, when the bus is, the next bus is coming, and all the information. And mm-hmm. that was located at National Harbor.
Okay.
And I want to know, is how far has that come in 2 years? I mean, because I was out at many other locations, and there was no bus, no button to push. So where is that in your map?
So I'll actually have to follow up with some other folks about that. You're asking how many other stops we've been able to implement that same button where you can push it and hear in both English and Spanish how long until the next bus? Is that correct?
Yes, because in my mind, I think for 2 years, they should all be almost done, but I went to many locations and there's no button. Okay. So a blind person doesn't have any information.
Yeah, understood. I am not entirely sure. That's not something that we're looking at as part of this project, but I can follow up with folks in bus transportation and bus services to see both how many additional stops they've been able to add that to in the past 2 years, and then also whether they have kind of a continued plan for how to keep pushing that out. But I unfortunately do not know that off the top of my head.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
This is Zenu. If any other members would like to ask a question to Melissa, please come off of mute now.
Can I, Anu? I haven't put your raised hand. Can I ask a question now?
Yes, Chair Calabria, please go ahead.
You know, Melissa, you mentioned bus stops, and Denise just mentioned push buttons which will tell people both in English and Spanish what's happening with the next bus. These are amenities. We were scheduled to talk about the access guidelines in our next session, starting at 4:45, but he's been had to postpone. But the access guidelines also deals with amenities such as Denise just brought up, with respect to bus stops in general and access to them. Have you all looked at these accessibility guidelines? Because they just came into force a month ago, just over a month ago. I would urge that you look at them because they have some applicability, at least be aware that they're out there and that users, whether they're interviewed or not, will do as Denise has just said, be interested in adequate amenities to the bus routes, which include bus stops and bus shelters.
Tino, this is Carol Lopez. If you're talking about the public rights of way rule that just came out, are you saying that they're requiring bus shelters?
Well, they discussed them, and one of the reasons why the Fed come is absolutely to talk about what's required with respect to, but they do cover things.
I just wanted to clarify that all the standards for as far as accessibility are in the ADA. They've been there before, and WMATA always has been very careful to make sure that we don't call something accessible unless it is. Most of these bus stops are not under our control, so they're different accessibility levels. Just wanted to clarify that, and thank you.
Well, that's what we need to talk to Scott Lindley, because who has control? And according to the accessibility guidelines that were just issued, somebody's got to provide access to people with wheelchairs or who have other disabilities. Somebody's got to do that.
Yeah, now, all the jurisdictions, are required to provide accessible bus stops, except that there are so many of them that were there a long time ago and that's still in the process of transitioning. And I think you're right, this public rights of way accessibility guide rule is going to help towards that, to move in that direction even better. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, just another thing for Melissa and her team to think about, that it's one thing to provide better routes, but those routes have got to stop somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I think where that the better routes have to be serving people who have disabilities and who need decent places to get off or to wait for these buses. So it's probably not as important as asking people where buses should go, but it's also important though to make sure that buses go where people can either wait in decent comfort or to get off correctly. So anyway, you have more time if you'd like, Melissa.
Okay.
Because we had a post.
Okay, thank you for that comment. I jotted down that we should take a look at the accessibility guidelines. I think to Carol's point, it is a tricky situation because we really do have to work collaboratively with our jurisdictional partners who have control of the roadway, but we definitely have those longstanding relationships, and it's something that We're working closely with them on the bus network redesign. So that's another avenue to have these conversations. But appreciate the comment to look out for those.
I will send you the guidelines that just became effective September 7th.
Okay,
which
great.
Were to be fed today. I will
appreciate
send
that. Thank you.
This is Pat Sheehan raised his hand. Pat, go ahead.
Yeah, Tino, I first of all have to feign ignorance a little bit on the public rights of way accessibility guidelines, and I should be more up on it than I am right now. But I do believe that you either need to have sign off by DOJ or Department of Transportation still on those guidelines. So that is one thing that why don't I see if I can check and find out exactly where we are on those guidelines. I've got some notes that I need to take a look at. And now the Access Board published them.
I just sent you the abstract, the executive
right.
summary.
Yeah,
and it
right.
says
and,
who hasn't yet approved it. These are now in effect. Take a look at it.
It says, excuse me, this is Carol Lopez, and it's in the PROAC register. It says, as stated in the major issues state section above, these guidelines do not address existing facilities unless they are altered at the discretion of a covered entity, DOJ and USDOT. Regulations implementing these guidelines under the ADA. So they don't address existing facilities, but they do address new facilities.
Okay. Just take a look at what I'm going to send to Kim, which is the executive summary. And it lends me to believe that regardless of what DOJ or any other agency does now, these come into effect. And it's going to be hard because you're right. Multiple jurisdictions or even bus stops may be on private property or even residential private property. But somebody's got to meet these standards. Okay, well, anyone else have anything for Melissa?
Chair Calabria, this is Zenu. I do not see any other hands up.
Okay, then. Thank you very much, Melissa. You're doing a great job. I hope you'll consider seeing how we can get, as you say, some wins out there quickly, even though June 24th is not yet upon us. But think about it. And remember, we know that mistakes can be made, but mistakes will be corrected. You know, in the meanwhile, let's get something here to show folks that we're moving. Thank you very much, Melissa.
Yeah, appreciate all of you having us again and appreciate your input throughout the course of this project. Really, truly.
Okay.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
Okay. So Chair Calabria.
Yes.
The committee could either have a discussion about public right-of-way access guidelines, or you can move on to the bus and rail subcommittee work plan.
Well, let's see. I sent out something within the past hour regarding the, and I'm trying to bring it up, the access guidelines. And, you know, the excerpts, I'm bringing up the last paragraph of the executive summary. And in it, it does say that the federal government has not acted fast enough, and what it has done, it's been without clear, specific, enforceable technical standards for accessibility in public rights of way. These final accessibility guidelines for pedestrian facilities in public rights of way will serve as the technical basis of enforceable standards issued under the ABA by GSA, USPS, DOD, etc. So I don't know. We maybe we need Kelly to help us. She's a lawyer and she can figure out what this legalese in English means. But the federal government has admitted, or at least the Access Board has admitted that the federal government has been slow, extremely slow, in getting out these accessibility guidelines. But now they're out there, you know. And if you take a look at the executive summary, some of those things, many of those things, have a direct bearing on the work that we're responsible for. So I know it's hard for, it's even, you know, when I looked at the, beyond the executive summary, tried to wade through maybe something 3 times, 4 times, 10 times as long as the executive summary, that was very difficult to do. And certainly because I'm not a lawyer, it makes it even tougher. But it's right out there. I sent you the executive summary. So it's incumbent upon members and staff to take a look at what those executives, the executive summary does say. So having said that, we don't have our federal guest with us today, but Anu, you think you can get him at some point soon?
Well, so the next meeting would be on November 13th. We have asked him to come back that day.
Okay, good.
Hopefully good. He would be able to make it that day.
Yeah, well, it really looked amazing that he responded so quickly to coming today. So it's certainly not out of the question that he's having the delay until November 13th. Well, so,
yes.
You know, this is Carol Lopez. I would like to give you a few, discuss a couple of points on this public rights of way guidelines. One of the things that the U.S. Access Board is the government entity that creates the technical standards for accessibility. Right. They're the ones that did the ADA standards for trauma, right. and then they're the ones that created this. The federal agencies that are, for example, the FTA or DOT, they, when they adopt that standard, then it becomes a law. A rule. Okay. So right now they have published the standard and then the local jurisdictions and the DOT, they have to adopt that standard as their standard. And that's how it goes. But the wonderful thing about this particular technical standard is that now we can point to that and say, see, this is what the Access Board says. Whether it's the rule or not, we have a standard that we can point to. WMATA can say, we want this to happen. And because we have a federal agency that developed the standards, which is a great thing. So one of the things that they have done is they've determined what the path of travel within buildings, it's the accessible path of travel, and it has to be 36 inches wide. And but in the public right of way, this document has called it the pedestrian access route. And that pedestrian access route has to be a minimum of 48 inches wide. So that's one of the things that the key things in this particular document. Then they're also talking about audible pedestrian signals, which is very important to this group. They're talking about how what it should say, how long you should press the button so that it could say more things, and whether it should have a repetitive wait sign, etc., when you're doing a pedestrian crosswalk signal. And in the past, some of this was described in the International Code Council accessibility standards, but now it's described very clearly in this public rights of way document. Now, the other thing they talk about is that you have to have a clear space in front of these pedestrian crossing signals, and it has to be flat. For example, you can't put this pedestrian crosswalk signal on the ramp. You have to put it at the land, you know, where it's flat. So somebody who uses a wheelchair can approach it, touch it, and wait until there's a crosswalk sign, you know, walk sign. Then, and other things that they have described is the volume of these pedestrian audible signals. They're saying that they can't be higher than 100 decibels. And but they have to be 5 decibels louder than ambient noise. What that means is when, and they also mentioned that currently technology, due to technology changes, most of these signals come readily available with that type of a package. So when it's in the middle of the night, you press the crosswalk, it might be quieter. So the signal is not going to be as loud as 100 decibels, which is very loud. And when it's a very high traffic time, then the signal is going to be lower, the volume of the crosswalk signal is going to be lower. Other things that they've done, and we've already asked for this within WMATA many, many years ago, we started doing this, is whenever we develop an area that belongs to WMATA to do an adjacent, a joint development project, and we have streets added to it, we've advocated, our office of ADA policy and planning had advocated for on-street accessible parking, which means that when you park, you don't have a curb that prevents you from leaving your sedan if you transfer to a wheelchair. If you don't happen to have a ramp in the vehicle and you use a sedan, you can somebody can drop you off and you can transfer directly to your wheelchair, and then you can roll out. And that's an accessible parallel parking space. So they're also requiring, and we already do that, and it's been, the ADA already requires this accessible passenger loading zones. And they're also saying that when there's a construction project, you can't block that accessible passenger loading zone. You have to provide a temporary accessible passenger loading zone, which is very important. So, and there are many other details, but that's what this document actually says.
Yes, I understand that. Mm-hmm. It says things that I've just learned. Mm-hmm. I never heard of the word vibrotactile.
Vibrotactile, Tino, this is Pat. Yeah. So the vibrotactile sign on the accessible pedestrian signal is an arrow that is usually right below the button, which points in a certain direction, right? But the point of that is it's vibrotactile, so if you are deafblind, you can't hear the walk sign is on to cross announcement or whatever. You can feel that arrow vibrating, and so you know when to move and in which direction you're moving. And what's interesting is now that my vision has decreased, I might line up rather incorrectly, let's say, in crossing a intersection. And so I'm using that arrow now to make sure that I am in the middle of the path for that crosswalk, so I'm not going to veer off to the left or the right. And Carol is right. And the one thing I wanted to check, and I don't want to be too strong on it because I just am not up on it, but I believe that although the guidelines have been sent out by the access board, that it does have to be adopted by Department of Transportation and also Department of Justice, who's going to be enforcing it. One of the other areas with all that being said, you know, I'm sure it will be, but one of the things that's important also is that these guidelines now become part of the manual on uniform traffic control devices, which is kind of the Bible that the traffic engineers all use. And so things like the accessible pedestrian signals, how they're set up, the tones, the arrows, the type of communication, whether it's going to, you know, in the old days they had chirps and cuckoos, and then they had beeping sound, or then they had the walk sign is on to cross, and now they use tones to let you know when it's good to cross the street. So they're making that all uniform so that when you go from, in our case, let's see, you go from Virginia to DC to Maryland, you're going to have the same kind of signals, and you'll know what to expect as far as that's concerned. The other thing that it does a really good job at is the path of travel, let's say also on sidewalks, making sure that things like your poles are out of the way, your utility poles are not out of the way, I mean, are not in the way of the sidewalk so that you can get around there, let's say with a wheelchair and that sort of thing, that you've got your crosswalks that are going to be, having your truncated domes, warning pathways there. And Carol, you're right. We're arguing that right now on the ANSI International Code Committee with respect to, the truncated domes, and do they need to be this particular color or that particular color, with the color contrasts and all of that. But it's good to have all of that consistent. And I know this has been around, Tino, since 2011, 2013. I mean, it's just been languishing for a long time. And there's a lot that's not in here now. I mean, the floating bus stops issues that we talked about, all that stuff that we're working on, it's not even in here because that wasn't, we didn't start looking at that stuff till 2016, 2018. So, but I think that we're making progress, and certainly having this is a good thing. And I think that, if we can get Scott Wimbley here from the Access Board, that would be good. He certainly is a subject matter expert. You know, it's a long time coming, so I think we'll make some good progress. Once I get my head out of some of the work stuff I'm doing right now, I need to go back and take a look at some of the lectures that are out there on PROAG. And if I can get access to some of the information, I'll send it to you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Let me mention, though, Denise was right. When months ago she said, I'll go and somebody come with me, and both Denise and Steve went to look at some bus stops. And that may be what we have to do. If nobody looks at them, then we don't know whether these rules should be applied locally or not, if nobody sees them. So Denise, congratulations to you, or our thanks to you for having mentioned it the first time. And you and Steve went out. And maybe we have to do more of that. Or maybe staff has to do more of that. We can't all spend 24 hours a day, and neither can staff. But once these rules are out there, we have to see the bus stops that we use and whether they follow the rules, or the paths to the bus stops follow the rules, etc. But anyway, we will hear. The reason why I was so hopeful that Scott Lindley could come is that the executive summary is complicated enough, but the whole order is so lengthy, it takes time to go through it. Maybe he can, my hope is that he will then identify for us what we ought to prioritize in the kind of work we do. But anyway, unless anybody has any other comments on that, we can move on. Anu,
Chair Calabia, the BRS has not had an opportunity yet to discuss the work plan for the year.
I'm sorry.
Tried to do that some time ago. Due to some other reasons, we could not do that. So this is a great opportunity for the committee to create the work plan.
Yeah, and didn't you send some material out regarding some items that we could consider?
I do not recall.
Okay. Well, let's see. It is now 5:10, and we're ahead of ourselves on the schedule. But in terms of the work plan, gee whiz, I think this this new what Patrick has just discussed, what we've been discussing regarding the access guidelines, that seems to me to be a huge thing to look into, at least aspects of that, which we could pursue either with volunteers from the committee to go check out some of the things that the access guidelines look at, or to have somebody look at them for us as we move forward in making sure that the landscape is accessible for seniors and people with disabilities. So that's such a huge topic, but that would be one thing. Which maybe there's a way of breaking it up to fit the work plan.
So this is Anu, and just to add a bit more to the work plan, we constantly bring speakers, guest speakers, and topics to the BRS as anything develops or if there's any update pertaining to Metro bus service and Metro rail service.
Right.
If there are any topics of the that the committee thinks would be of interest for the remainder of the year, we can focus on those as well and bring guest speakers.
You know, I think it would be interesting, under this is Pat again. I love the Better Bus Network. I think it's really good. But I also hear that we have a, you know, $750,000 deficit. So it'll be interesting to see how.
$750 million.
Yeah. Did I say million? Yeah.
No, I don't think so. But anyway.
I'm sorry. What is it? 750,000?
$758 million at one point.
But million? Okay. So, I mean, just to see, you know, how those two things mesh. Certainly, Tina, we will be coming up with a budget that we're going to have to maybe get on board with over the next 3 months.
Well,
that'll be interesting to see how that meshes in with something like the Better Bus Network.
Sure. Well, Randy Clark, our GM CEO, and the board has already begun interfacing with the suburban jurisdictions in DC to figure out a way of coming up to cover this deficit. They have us in mind generally, but we best speak for ourselves. And I don't know if there's a way that we can put in our 2 cents worth regarding safeguarding some of the money needed for what we do.
I think that's important, Tina. We've made some gains, I think, over the last, you know, few years, 5 years or whatever. And we certainly want to be able to keep those gains. And I think that's what one of the things that we need to be able to fight for in the next budget going forward.
How do we do that as AAC members or AAC in general? I mean,
a couple of things. I think one thing is that the joint recommendations from us and the RAN, I think are important, because access for the disabled community really helps with access for the entire population, as Phil always says. So building access is a good thing. I think that a lot of the information that we're getting from Jordan on the data that we're getting and the customer satisfaction that it represents makes a difference. And then you also have the ability to tell stories, as Denise is so good at doing, when you go before the board. So I think it's something that we want to work together and come up with our usual talking points to go before the board to see what our direction is going to be. And so whether that is talking points from the from bus rail, from Metro Access, and AAC, we'll develop those jointly, and then we want to make sure we're meshing those along with the ramps, so that when we come before the board, we've got one set of discussions, talking points to go with. One of the things that the RAC is doing right now also is the RAC is looking to see if we can get individuals from our committee, from the RAC, and also from the community to go before the board and to start telling our stories about, what the system means to us and how we utilize the portions of the system we use that make a difference in our life. So we know that because we've been doing it for years. And so those are the things that we want to move forward with going down the line. So I think a good part of it is some of the advances you've talked about tonight, paying attention to the reports we're getting from Jordan, because that's data-driven, coming up with very personal stories, not just from us, but also from constituents that we work with and live with, who want to share their stories with WMATA. Doesn't mean you have to go to a board meeting, but you can also get those stories, on the phone or videotaped or whatever, through Zoom or whatever, and share them that way too. So I think that there's going to be, in the next few months, a concerted effort to be able to do that, so that when we go before the board and we have to defend what we have out there, we don't lose it. I think.
Well, that's going before the board, but the money bags are held by the county governments and DC.
Right.
Maybe there's some legitimate way that we who are experienced with the needs of people with disabilities mm-hmm. and seniors, maybe there's some way we can go to where the money bags are.
Well, certainly, and certainly you understand the cap that the jurisdictions have on right now and how that's not going to work.
Yeah.
But I think we need to pay attention to those.
Yeah, but is there some legitimate way that we as individual constituents of the county governments and DC can go and talk about our needs there? We can tell WMATA all we want, and they'll be convinced, but that doesn't mean that they don't have the money, really. They have to go to the jurisdictions as well. Maybe right. we need to help get the message out on our own.
That's certainly something we can do too. Yeah, not precluding that at all.
We can include that in the work plan, figuring out a way that we can present our needs, not just to the WMATA board and to the GM CEO, but also to the governments that control where we live as residents. You can figure out some way of wording that, Anu, but that might be one thing too.
This is Anu. Ms. Rush raised her hand. Ms. Rush, go ahead.
We need to talk to the public and make them understand it's not just the disabled community, but the public. It's a link in the chain. We're all chained together. If we ask for the buses to go out to Waldorf or 210, and the public doesn't ride that bus, and you see five people a week maybe on the bus, they're going to discontinue that route because it's not profitable or business-like to have five people riding on a bus line or they could go somewhere else. So we're all connected together. We have to talk to our friends, like we talked about what happened on the show last night. We need to talk to our friends about how important it is to talk to every jurisdiction about getting some money raised, or the service is going to be drastically cut. We're going to be mad at each other, but we're going to be mad when we need to be mad at each other and not WMATA, because if we don't use the service of the bus line that you asked to be extended, then you know that's going to stop Metro Access from going out there. And we also, every time we talk to a lot of people, we know a lot of people, we need to be at every function, we need to be talking to the people who have the money and say, listen, I really, you all can do better. We don't want to end up like what we have with Congress and the Democrats and the Republicans fighting each other. We've got to stand as one and say what we need, and you got the money, give it up. PG now has had 3 sessions. They're going to have 1 more session. They've had 2 sessions telling the governors and important people what you need, what you want. And there's not a lot of attendance, and you really have their ear listening, and you need to say, I need some money. That's all I have to say.
Well, thanks, Denise. We're not alone in the sense that each of the jurisdictions probably has a county commission on disabilities or something like that. Maybe we can start by 1 or 2 of us going there and letting them know that what our concerns is, and then maybe they can join us in talking to the elected county officials or DC officials to express our needs, because WMATA alone can't do it, and certainly not be so specific as to talk about our needs when they go to these governmental money bag holders. So maybe we ought to develop allies with the related commissions or boards that are like us and try and serve people with disabilities and seniors. I don't know how we can work that into the work plan, but
certainly I know, Tina, that this is Pat again, that the Montgomery County Commission on Disabilities has some folks that are very dedicated on there. And I know I've been to some of their meetings quite often to talk about various subjects. Betsy Luking, who is, the key person over there, is very, very much in favor of all that. So, yeah. But I agree with you. I mean, as much as we can go to the commissions and have them on the same page that we are, you've got another voice to the mix, and that's good.
Yeah, I've been to the Montgomery County Commission, and Betsy has been there for decades, it seems. But I'm sure that they'll want to say something about those needs to their county government. It wouldn't hurt for them to have us with them, stand shoulder to shoulder when they do. So if you can figure out a way, draft a way that we can add that kind of thing to the work year. Any other suggestions or questions? Members of the committee, we don't have everyone here, but anyone else? Phil, you've been around a long time. Can you suggest some work year projects? Phil may be gone.
This is, you know, Darnie's Bush just raised her hand. Darnie's, go ahead.
Yeah, I, you know, live in a district, and the District of Columbia publishes a calendar of when they have meetings, when different committees meet. And so we need to have our members that are members of the different counties and localities see when they have the meetings on transportation and see when they have the meetings on people with disabilities and volunteer some of our time so that it's publicized. All of those meetings are publicized and they're also recorded. And that's a good way for, as Ms. Rush said, to invite other people in. Most people don't even realize that WMATA is not a government entity. They don't realize that the government is not the sole supporter of WMATA. They think that that's a public entity. So people need to be educated, and I think it would help us if we educated the public by going to these ANC meetings, you know, advisory neighborhood meetings, county meetings, at least quarterly. You know, I mean, I could volunteer my time and go to at least one meeting quarterly. We have other people from the district that could go quarterly. You know, that I think those things would help. And I know that Doris is on the Council of Government, so they're very aware of the issues, the people in charge, but the general public doesn't know about these things.
Darnice, I think the staff of the District of Columbia Disability Rights Committee just announced what the next meeting is. I think it may be in the next few days, but you're right. We should go to them. And when they talk about things to their governments about chipping into WMATA's budget, they and we together can do it. Any other suggestions from members?
Chair Calabria, Sandy raised her hand, and I just want to add that this topics can be certainly added as the time goes on, and if other topics of interest of the committee. Sandy, go ahead.
So I know everybody has so much spare time, that's in air quotes, myself included, but I do know that Fairfax County has a disability advisory board. That might not be its exact title. And I could try to make an effort to get on their calendar to speak. I spoke probably 5 years ago addressing issues for people who have low vision. I could speak to seniors and people with disabilities needing public transportation, even though most or all of the Fairfax County bus system is not specifically Metro, although I can use my Metro pass to ride those buses, but certainly the Silver Line and therefore Metro access rides are available in much, but not all of Fairfax County. And raising awareness would make sense.
Yeah, that's terrific. We're on our way then in trying to ally ourselves with the jurisdictional commissions such as ours. Well, Anu, has anybody else got their hand up on this? And if not, we could go to
perhaps go to public comment, and then if you'd like, we can, Sandy wanted to share some information.
I was just going to say, yes, there's like no one, let's ask for public comment.
Okay. Great. I see Janice Samuel just raised her hand. Janice, go ahead.
Thank you, Anu. Well, to Ms. Rush's point, the next Prince George's County Commission on Individuals with Disabilities is having a listening town hall session on November 6th in Laurel. So that's a good opportunity to do just that, to bring more awareness that the county needs to pitch in to Metro. Thank
you. Is that the day we meet anew, November 6th?
I'm sorry, Chair Calabia?
Is that the day that our committee meets?
November 6th?
I think it's a Tuesday. Is November 6th a Tuesday?
No, I think it's a Monday, but this is Ms. Rush. I think it's a Monday.
November 6th is the
Monday. It is
Monday,
a Monday.
And that's the day we have the AAC full committee.
Yeah.
The ERS is on the next Monday, which is November 13th.
Yeah, but the meeting that PG County is having is on the 6th, and it's 5 to 8. It's 5:30 to 8.
Is that a Zoom meeting, online meeting?
You have to go in person.
Oh.
You can do Zoom, but I suggest you go. I went to the last one. You get the face-to-face effect with the officials.
Sure, sure.
And PG has some issues.
Yeah.
So I will be.
You'll be there, Denise?
Yes.
Good.
I was
I
at the last.
Encourage. Yeah, I would encourage that.
Yeah.
You know, anyone, I think, Anu, although we'd like to have great attendance, anyone who wants to go out to a commission meeting like this, I think it's important. And you understand all the, at least the bus issues that we have. And we've been fighting in that area for a long time, Denise. So I agree.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I would encourage you too, Denise, if you would, to speak up for us. Now, is there any other public?
Donnie's Henry, you just raised your hand. Go ahead.
Yeah. What I would like to say is that most of these, when they make these announcements, they also accept written commentary. And what we could do is come up with, like, as we come up with the chairman's letter, we should come up with a letter that would cover all the jurisdictions, and then we could send it in when they have meetings too. You could do a letter about our main issues that we like. And I know that the chair of WMATA was saying that they need $750 million, I think it is, so that they won't run out of money on next year, 2024. So maybe we could reiterate that in a letter.
I think it's $750 million.
Yeah. Oh, 7 years. So maybe we could address that in a letter and make sure we at least submit that if we can't attend these meetings, at least quarterly. Because the general public really doesn't know that WMATA is not financed by them. I don't understand it, but they don't understand. Or they choose not to. Because the first thing they say, well, they're using my money. Not really. But that's another suggestion.
Okay. Well, Patrick, that meeting is coming up before we would have a chance to review a statement. Are we able to create a statement that could
I
be
think, yeah, I think we're on record, Tino, as in the past saying that we do want to support, you know, for certainly the bus and, you know, the bus avenues out there with respect to Better Bus Network, and that this is important to us. So I think we can put something together that can be submitted in time for that.
Yeah. Well, if somebody could draft it and circulate it and, you know, so some of us can see it and chime in or whatever, but yeah, let's get
okay.
some, for that occasion.
Good. Okay. Certainly, we've taken a position on that in the past, and it is part of what we've advocated for in the past. So yeah, we can do that.
Well, go ahead, Denise.
This is Ms. Rush. We've got to remember that, yes, we have issues with the disability community, but this WMATA issue is a worldwide, statewide issue. People are not going to be able to get to work. People are not going to be able to go to restaurants. It is going to shut the city down if they start stopping at 9 o'clock. And that means Metro Access is going to stop at 9 o'clock. So you better tell Tom, Dick, and Harry about it. Not just to the disability community, but to everybody who's walking, talking, doing anything. It's critical. The city is going to be shut down, literally.
Well,
people aren't going to be able to serve you because they got to go home. It's going to be a disaster. It is not just a disability community problem.
And it is This is Donnie's. It's also a tourism problem because the DMV gets a lot of money from tourism. If people can't ride the metro to go down to the mall, to go to the harbor, to go to different places in this area, Fairfax or, Epcot City, different places, that's gonna be a great decrease on the budget of every jurisdiction.
That's what I'm saying. So we gotta talk to everybody, not just disabled people. We've got to get the attention of everybody. It is going to be critical. It's going to be unbelievable. You're not going to get to the airport. You're not going to be able to get there for $4 because they're going to stop the service. You just don't realize how bad it's going to be. And you don't want a taste of it.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about some ways of spreading the word around, and not just within our committee or us to WMATA. We now realize that we have to go beyond WMATA because WMATA itself doesn't hold the money bags. It's the jurisdictions that do, and the jurisdictions need to be convinced that WMATA needs the kind of resources so that in turn we can be served, that is, people with disabilities and seniors, etc. So,
I'm sorry. At the board meeting, there was a gentleman who said from the public, why can't all the people who have the shops, the restaurants, the buildings, all services pay taxes that the metro buses and trains bring the people to them, then they have money. Why can't they pay a tax that is set aside to go back to WMATA? And that is a good suggestion.
Well,
has anybody thought about that?
It's not thought about because taxation is so difficult a problem. A lot of transportation budgets are supported by gasoline taxes. Well, nobody wants to up the gasoline tax. And in fact, with the spread of electric vehicles, the need for gasoline goes down and the taxes that comes from gasoline goes down. So, we're in a real bind. Taxes, I'd love to see each jurisdiction raise taxes and funnel some of those taxes to WMATA. But
I'm not talking about jurisdictions. I'm talking about businesses. If I can't get to Ruth Chris, and Ruth Chris is making money, each person that has a business has a taxation that goes for transportation. But it's just a thought. I mean, they can sit up there and have the place open and have nobody in there because they can't get there. You got to have, you know.
Yeah.
In one hand and six in the other.
Well, if you can think something through and draft something up for us as to how to convince businesses and other corporations to kick in for transportation, let us know. We'll try and do something with it. But in the meanwhile, it's 5:41. And are there any other public comments? If not, we should turn to Sandy, who wants to comment on what we saw at L'Enfant Plaza.
Sure, Calabia, this is, I know Darnie's just raised her hand. If you'd like to take her comment as last.
Sure, Darnie's. Yes, please, Darnie's.
Yeah. My comment is, I understand what Ms. Rush is saying, but basically it's up to the jurisdiction. And a jurisdiction always finds a way to put transportation at, you know, at a lower level. They're going to say the schools need this and everybody needs this. So unless we come up with a powerful letter, you know, saying that businesses should direct their money to WMATA, it's not going to really make any sense to the jurisdictions because they already give quite a bit of money. I mean, they actually do support Metro WMATA a lot. But that's why I say the general public is the one that really doesn't know how important, how crucial it is to have more money for WMATA because they feel that the government is given, it's supported by the government and it's not.
So, Denise, do you want to respond, Denise?
My response would be when they're sitting up in there with their liquor and nobody's buying it and they will be drinking it themselves. They'll be eating their own steaks. They'll be dancing to the music on the tables by themselves. They'll understand because if they don't get enough money to make transportation work, they'll understand. They will definitely see the full picture. And transportation is major. So we might have to be like Missouri, show me. They might have to see it before they believe it.
Okay. Well, are there any other comments either from the public or from members about this topic? If not, we said we would let Sandy comment on what the signs are that she's seen. Sandy, do you want to comment now?
Sure. So this is sort of a change of topic from this funding issue, but in a way it's related to funding. Doing the static signs, not the digital signs, within the metro stations. Sarah Meyer has presented some ideas, and in L'Enfant Plaza and in Metro Center, some of these have been put in place, some, you know, slight modifications to signage. And Sarah Meyer did ask for comments, and so perhaps I should be putting this in writing and sending it to her, but hopefully she'll hear it through this meeting. So both of those two stations that I mentioned, L'Enfant Plaza and Metro Center, have multiple lines, and you're trying to change from one line to another, you're trying to find exits. their complicated stations. So I just wanted to comment about a few, four observations I made in L'Enfant Plaza, and some of these apply to Metro Center also. The pylons, those four-sided pillars, as you're going up and down escalators and staircases, there are pylons right at the top of some of those escalators and staircases between the upper level and the lower level. And the fourth side of that pylon, there's information on all four sides, but one of those sides faces the escalators and stairs. And I don't know anybody who's riding an escalator, and I'm not just talking disabled, can't see very well like me, who has time to be looking at that side facing the escalator as they're trying to watch their feet and not get caught as they're stepping onto or off of an escalator. So I don't understand why WMATA would put information on that side of a pylon right at the top of a, or right at the bottom of an escalator or staircase where people can't really read that information. My second point is, the exit directions on both of those stations, there are multiple exits. And for some reason, the exit information is frequently put on two sides, two of the four sides of a pylon. So if you don't see your exit listed on one side, you're scratching your head saying, well, where is my exit? And then you have to walk around the pylon and look at another side to say, oh, well, here's the information for the exit to C Street or 13th Street or whatever. It just seems more logical to me to have all of the exit from the metro station, all of that exit information on one side of the pylon so you can read down the list and find the exit you're looking for and the arrow, which direction to go. The third point, Sarah Meyer suggested that metro lines might in the future, and she didn't, you know, this is just a suggestion she had thrown out there, that metro lines might become numbered lines or lettered lines. And I just have to reiterate that that makes no sense to me. Currently, every one of the metro lines has a color, and it's always referred to by a two-letter abbreviation, SV for silver, OR for orange, GR for green. Why would you want to add letters, just A, B, C, D, E? That makes no sense. Stick with the letters we already have. And advertising. Now, Sarah made a point about static advertising, and I saw some examples in L'Enfant Plaza. There was an escalator I was coming up headed towards the exit for the Metro headquarters building. And I apologize, I don't ever remember the exact street exit number, but I'm going up this escalator. At the top of the escalator ahead of me, I see advertising that's sort of like on the first thing I see is ahead of me, like 20 feet away, advertising from the floor on a up about 3 feet on a wall. And, you know, I'm looking at that, trying to figure out what it means. Well, it's just advertising. So I look to the left, I look to the right, and the pylon to the left and the pylon to the right, all I can see on the side of the pylon facing me is advertising. No information about exits, no information about, you know, turning around or where to go to find the other metro lines in that station. And then as I'm walking across that area, looking for information about the exit on the floor, there's all this advertising. And I have to say, as a person without good vision, that advertising on the floor is very distracting. It suddenly makes me feel like, is the floor uneven? So I'm a little bit baffled by the location of the advertising, the static advertising. There were other places in L'Enfant Plaza where the static advertising was less obtrusive in a way, maybe harder for people to see, but at least it was not distracting from trying to find information where I'm trying to go in the station. So I just wanted to comment about that because Sarah Meyer had asked for feedback on the static signage. Okay, that's it.
Sandy, is it possible for you to draft up something that we could see and also send out on behalf of the BRS committee?
Absolutely. I can't do it tomorrow. My day tomorrow is already spoken for, but maybe Thursday, Friday, I can draft up something and send it to Anu. Send it to everybody, I guess, would be the way to do it.
Yeah, send it to everybody.
Okay.
Let's all chime in and then get it to Sarah to look at.
Okay. And I mean, I don't necessarily think this is the highest priority in the universe, the fewer mistakes that are made that need to be corrected, in a way that saves money. And the more information for the public, the tourists, that's useful information, the better. I mean, I'm only one example of one person riding Metro, but if I can't figure it out and I've been riding Metro for a while, what's a tourist going to be doing?
Yeah, so. I agree.
This is Anu. Janice Samuel just raised her hand. Janice, go ahead.
Thank you, Anu. Sandy, you're just one person, but I agree with everything you just said as another low vision individual. And I'd like to add to your paper that you turn in regarding the static exit signs that are on the far wall. If you get off of a Metro rail train, you might see the signs that are on the wall pointing to whichever exit, and that's very hard to see. It's so far away. So I would add that to the list of difficult to see signs.
Thank you, Janice. This is Anu. Sandy, when you send your notes to the committee, once the committee has a concurrence, I would be happy to share your feedback with Sarah Meyer.
So it would be acceptable for me to send it to the committee and you simultaneously, and then when we get our act together, you would pass it along to Sarah?
Sure.
Okay.
It occurred to me one thing. We've talked about correcting things that may be visible or not too visible for people with low vision. But Doris, in a past meeting, brought up something, and Doris is deaf. At all the meetings I've been with in person with her, she's always had to use the earphones. So if we're going to correct things in terms of signs, which may be able to be seen by low vision people or blind people, what about making sure that deaf people are accommodated with information such as we're talking about? Could an announcement be made that there are loudspeakers that go as far as the kiosk? Could the loudspeaker say the way to the Silver Spring stop is to the left, or you know, some other stop to the right? That's just a rough approximation of what I think that Doris was trying to get at, that we ought to, if we accommodate people who have any amount of vision, we should also try and accommodate people who have less hearing ability, or maybe deaf. I don't know. I don't know how to deal with this. Well, anyway, it is 5:54.
Chair Kalabe, this is Zona. We have someone on the phone with last four numbers 3058. If you can identify yourself and make your comment, might be the last comment we might be able to take for this meeting.
Oh, thank you, Anu. This is Vanessa. I am on my phone because the computer wouldn't allow me to unmute.
Okay.
But I did wanted to see how difficult it would be to add some Braille to those posts, or even a Braille trail, something that's kind of what you have at the edge of the subway station as you are going on to the entrance to the car, to add some Braille trail leading totally blind folks from the outside going into the escalator and to the either the escalator or the elevator. I know that's very expensive, but just a suggestion, and even to the signage, those posts that you're talking about, some sort of Braille. I don't know if Braille can be added to something like that. So that's my suggestion.
So this is Sandy, and I will say that the pylons now have some raised lettering. I don't completely understand it. I'm not the person to address Braille or abbreviated Braille. Perhaps Carol Lopez could make a comment about that. I wasn't really attempting to address everything. I was just trying to make observations of things that I noticed that caught my attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the pylons, okay. This is Carol Lopez. The pylon signs state in Braille what the visual signs say. Therefore, if it says going to Shady Grove with an arrow pointing towards the escalator, that's what it would say to the left, or go straight ahead, it would say in Braille. I believe Vanessa was not talking about the actual signage. Correct me if I'm wrong. Vanessa, I think you were saying that you want some guidance tiles on the floor.
Is some that... guidance, yes, because okay. They're referred that to as Braille different. Trails.
Yes, yeah. Guidance tiles to direct... That creates it's a very large project, and it mm-hmm. then it will also have to come with some training and where it is that you're going, etc. You'd still need travel training to do that. So WMATA has explored the idea in the past, but that is a huge project.
Okay, I never knew that, so just a suggestion, because it's used in some training schools, very useful to totally blind individuals, so just a suggestion.
Yeah, they have those guidance tiles in other countries quite extensively, but in this area, it seems like not very many people have had that type of training to follow that. So it is.
And it doesn't take training, because most blind people, if you can feel the textile, then it just helps to direct. It may be some training. If you have a textile that's coming from the steps and then they don't feel anything else, and then you have one that's going towards the the turnstile, it's just a matter of feeling, because that's what the cane does. It feels for textures.
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
5:59 now. The meeting closed in seconds. Do I get a motion to close the meeting? Adjourn?
Darnie, so moved.
Seconds? Any seconds to
second?
A motion is a vote to adjourn. Then, is there a vote? Do people vote to adjourn?
Aye.
Hearing no objections, the meeting is adjourned. And thank you very much.